Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Justin. Thank you for asking.
Awesome.
On October 14th at the Westport Flea Market in the Buffalo Room, we're doing our meetup from 1 to 6. Aren't you excited?
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Well, I haven't really been asked so far, but the way it's going to be is Justin and I are planning to give a talk, a presentation, you might say, about the history of the show. Give our highs, our lows, and just talk about the evolution of the Generation Y podcast. And then after that, we'll be speaking with some other podcasters, Charlie from Insight, Lainey from True Crime Fan Club, and I think a couple of the ladies from Misconduct Pod as well. I'm very much looking forward to it. I want us to be able to talk about what got us into true crime and what we're most interested in now.
And I was on a podcast recently, Continuous Play Podcast, with Jay Newcastle and Ron from Den of Geek. And we talk about John Carpenter's The Thing. So it's pretty fun.
You were on there to talk about it because it's one of your favorite movies.
Yeah. And I wasn't the biggest fan of the sequel or prequel, whatever they came out with, because it was just a big CGI mess. But the original one is so well done with practical effects, and it creeped me out when I first saw it. Even to this day, it's still a psychological thriller. So we give it a thorough discussion.
Man, that film holds up. It's such an incredible piece of work. Also, I can't let the cat out of the bag yet, but I should have a surprise announcement in December. You might want to keep your ear out for that.
Tonight's episode was a request. I've forgotten now who wrote in for it, but when you have email, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and all the social media places, it's hard to go back and track down a request. But thank you, whoever it is, because this case is kind of nutball-y. So I'm excited about it.
The way I remember this going down is some months ago, Justin said, hey, I don't know, you don't have to do it right away, but write this name down and we should cover it as an episode at some point. I said, oh, okay, what is it? You know, and he told me and I made a note of it and said, Justin wants us to cover this. And then he asked me, I think like a week ago, hey, Aaron, who suggested this case? I mean, do you know why we're covering this one? I said, Justin, you told me about it. I think someone wrote to him personally and just said, hey, you should cover this. And then he looked it up and said, yeah, I should cover this. And then told me about it. But then somewhere along the way, he forgot that he told me about it. So I was laughing because I'm like, okay, that's the last time you get to say what we're going to cover. But it's funny because on the premium episodes, we kind of go back and forth. He'll suggest one, then I'll suggest one. And that's how we do those. But on this one, I'll come up with some, or we use a lot of listener suggestions. So this is just funny where the chain's broken somewhere. And then he completely forgot telling me about it.
So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about the murder of Elizabeth DeCaro.
This is not local to us, but it's a Missouri murder.
The synopsis would be, a man takes his children and his dog on a trip to the Lake of the Ozarks, which is a place where people vacation at in southern Missouri.
It's a huge lake.
He left his wife at home, and someone was waiting in the home and basically ambushed her and murdered her. Sometime later, her husband, Richard DeCaro, also known as Rick, he faced charges in this murder. And it was said that he had hired a hitman to take out his wife.
And it's so hard to prove murder for hire cases. I always just go back to the Colin Davis one and think, well, if they couldn't get the conviction to stick on that guy, then how do you prove it with anybody?
St. Charles County, Missouri. We start with high school sweethearts. Richard DeCaro and Elizabeth Van Isegem. They met in school. He was 15 years old and she was a year younger. Things moved quickly for them. They really hit it off. High school sweethearts. They had their first child while they were in high school. She was just 16. By this point, Richard had dropped out. He wanted to be an auto mechanic, so he started learning that trade. He had already been working with his father, so he knew a lot. Already knew what he wanted to do, so I guess that's why he dropped out, right? He didn't need to go learn about history.
I kind of dropped out of college because I was fixing computers to pay for college and then realized, oh, wait, I'm already doing kind of what I want to do.
She gets pregnant and then he asks her to drop out of school. Now, her mother, Georgiana, did not like this. And when they told her that they planned to get married, she said, no, not now. But when he's 18 and she's 17, they get married on January 16th, 1981. Richard DeCaro wanted to be an auto mechanic, and sure enough, in his teens, he's working at a service station, and then he became an auto mechanic when he was 15 years old. This story centers around a place that he's a manager at, known as the Old Orchard Service Station in Webster Grove, Missouri. Webster Grove is a very nice area, we'll put it like that, and it's about 20 minutes outside of St. Charles County.
It's a small town.
In 1991, in the fall, more than 10 years into their marriage, Richard DeCaro had an affair with his secretary at the service station. Her name was Patricia Brockelmeyer. Now, in just a matter of weeks, his wife found out about this. And as you can imagine, she was not happy about it. What happened next is really a matter of debate, I guess, because according to Richard, he sought to assure her that he would end it and that they would work things out.
They always say that, don't they?
Yeah. But his mother-in-law had a talk with him when she found out. She expected him to deny it, but he just told her. He said, yes, I've had an affair with this woman.
He goes on to say, I'm not in love with your daughter.
Yeah. He says, I don't even know if I've ever been in love with her. This is crazy because he and Elizabeth were high school sweethearts and they were close. And to give you more of an idea of just how into Elizabeth he was, they said he showered her with gifts, that he loved buying her things. And he was also very, very possessive of her. They had a neighbor who recounted that whenever she and his wife would go shopping together, that Rick would place a phone in the car so he could listen to their conversations. So very, very possessive, almost paranoid, wanting to know exactly what his wife was up to, where she was, when she would be back, really just almost stifling. And around the time of this affair, it's said that he almost had this attitude of, fine, you know what? I'm too stifling. Forget about it. I won't stifle you anymore. And that seems to be the lead into this affair.
It's always weird how the person that's cheating is the one that's keeping the tabs on the other to make sure that they're not doing anything wrong. It's sort of this projection of their own flaws.
So there's that question. Was the marriage to be saved? Well, in December of 1991, they leave the kids with other people and they go off to Lake of the Ozarks to, I guess, really try to patch things up and reestablish their relationship. But I don't think it worked, because January of 1992, she tells him to end the affair. So obviously it's still going on. She's telling him, you need to stop it.
Yeah, she's catching him in the act. She knows he's doing it, or he's making comments to her.
On January 10th of 1992, James Torregrossa, who's a manager at Gold's Gym, where Rick DeCaro exercises, drove his girlfriend's car up to the Old Orchard service station to get a tire. And while he's there, Rick starts talking to him, and he asks him if he knows anyone who could take his van off of his hands.
Take care of something for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rick's saying, yeah, this van, it's got heavy payments, man. I need to get rid of it. So is there any way we can get rid of it? And, you know, it's an insurance scam.
So essentially he's saying, I'm paying too much for this van that's a piece of crap, and it's worth more stolen or gone than keeping it and going further into debt with it.
Which is interesting, because in some reports I've read, his brother, Daniel DeCaro, who owns the service station, that's just a vehicle that is provided to the manager, provided to him.
But if you can get 10, 20 grand from a insurance claim, hey, you could maybe buy a new van. I don't know. However he's going to play it.
He also asks him about, you know, if he knows anybody who could put a hit on someone for him. And he goes on to say he wouldn't wish marriage on anyone. So it sounds like a very frustrated man. Let's talk about the van a little bit, because if he's trying to get more money, if he's trying to get money out of this through the insurance, why is that? Rick's making good money. He's making over $70,000 per year at his job. So why would he need money? Well, he has debts.
And he has employees. He's got overhead.
On January 20th, Rick took out two life insurance policies. Now, the first one he took out on himself, it was for $250,000. But the other one he took out on his wife, Elizabeth, and that one was for $100,000. And he is listed as the sole beneficiary.
So he takes that out on the 20th. What happened 6 days later?
Rick ran into his wife with their van in the garage, and it knocked her through a wall and into the kitchen. This is not a bump. This is... he ran through her with the van.
Let's break this down a little bit. He drove into the garage and the kids had left their bicycles parked where the car is supposed to be parked. And he asked his wife to get out and move the bicycles. And when she does so, he accelerates and crushes her in between the van and the wall, pinning her and driving her into the wall, through the wall, but not really into the kitchen. She's stuck in between two 4x4s. And what does he do after he drives the van into her and she's pinned? Does he put it in reverse and get out and say, I'm sorry, let me help you?
Yeah, if only that were the case.
Yeah, instead he gets out nonchalantly and goes and sits down in the living room and starts watching TV. And his wife has to free herself from the wall. She's injured.
That's to put it mildly.
And she confronts him about this, and he says, sorry, accidents happen. Now, I don't know what kind of life insurance policy he had just signed 6 days before, but typically you have to pay into them for a while to cash out. You can't just take one out and then get paid out the next day. It's usually not how they work, but maybe, possibly, that's what he did, is he found one where it would pay out immediately. And he thought, well, I'll cash in right now. But maybe I'm jumping ahead and I shouldn't be guesstimating or speculating what his thoughts were yet.
Well, what's not speculation is that he got about $30,000 on this claim.
Because he drove his van into a wall, like literally into the kitchen, with his wife in between the van and the kitchen. So the damage is done. He gets 30 grand. So, hey, this might just have been for the money. You know, I don't know.
Because Torregrossa didn't offer any help to Rick regarding his situation with the van or his wife, He then moved on to Craig Wells, who was also a manager at the Old Orchard service station. He asked him if he knew anyone who could steal his van for him, you know, because the payments were heavy. Wells responded that he had a brother-in-law named Daniel Anthony Bazile. And, well, Rick and Bazile met. Word had it, or supposedly, Bazile was offered $15,000 to steal the Chevy Blazer and kill Elizabeth DeCaro.
Daniel does have a rap sheet. He wasn't the most respectable character. It said that the negotiation for the van, to steal the van, would be $200 and then $15,000 for the hit on his wife, right?
Well, and stealing the Chevy Blazer.
Yeah. So maybe $15,200 if we're going to split hairs.
Yeah. Well, this will all be explained later because there's a reason for the Chevy Blazer as well. And we'll get to that. So now we've introduced Daniel Anthony Bazile. On February 8th, Bazile steals the van using keys that were provided to him by Craig Wells, and he was given a map, and he drove it to Jackson, Missouri, which is down by Cape Girardeau, which some of you may know where that is.
It's pretty remote. Nobody's around. He can dump this van and torch it without much interference.
He collected $200, supposedly, from Rick DeCaro. Justin, is this a good deal, $200 to steal a van? He's given an easy job here. I mean, it's all laid out for him.
I would take $200 to be handed a set of keys and drive a vehicle out to a field and set it on fire.
It's a reasonable price then.
Yeah, and if somebody is wanting to get out of car payments or van payments and they're going to file an insurance claim, well, $200 is beans to them because they're probably going to make $10,000 or $20,000 off the insurance claim. So $200 is a reasonable price for Rick, and it's pretty good money for a simple job for Daniel.
Now, the reason why $200 is probably good for Daniel Bazile is because, well, he doesn't have a lot of money. In fact, he doesn't even have a vehicle. He cleans out horse stalls for a living.
He's pretty much an ex-con, so it's hard for him to get work.
On February 28th, Bazile asked a friend of his named Jeffrey Niehaus for an untraceable gun. He must have found one because on March 4th, he shows Doug Meyer a .22 caliber pistol.
With white pearly handles.
So now he has a gun. Why does he need a gun, Justin?
Everyone needs a gun to defend themselves.
Apparently.
But he wanted a untraceable gun. Why would anyone need that? I don't know. Just because they want to go plink at cans out in the field. Yeah. So what?
Well, he's out on parole too. So I'm guessing he doesn't want anyone to know he has the gun, except now he's showing it off to people.
Criminals aren't that bright.
Yeah, there's something missing here.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
March 6th, 1992. Rick DeCaro is leaving to take his four kids and the family dog Ozzy on a trip to the Lake of the Ozarks. But what's missing is his wife. He told his wife to stay home.
Okay, I get that sometimes a parent will take the kids out and the other parent stays home. I get that there's times you split up to do things, to take care of things, but why not leave the dog at home? She's there to take care of him. It just seems like extra work when you're on vacation. Also, why wouldn't he want his wife there? That just seems weird. And it's very abrupt, this trip that he takes. And it's not announced. It's not really planned. I mean, he planned it, but he didn't inform his wife. He didn't really inform the kids.
Originally, the plan was his wife was planning to take the kids with her to Kansas City to visit an old neighbor of theirs. But Rick told her, no, I'm going to have a dad weekend with the kids down in the Lake of the Ozarks. Now, her mom, Georgiana, said she wasn't very happy with this. She knew her daughter wanted to go with the family, and she didn't like being left behind. So she went to work that day, and she was going to be home sometime before 3 o'clock?
Yeah. Two of the children came home that morning, and he went and picked up the other two children from school. And he picks up the dog and goes home to collect the two other children so they can leave for this trip. Neighbors report that the garage door was open up until around 2:30, and then closed, and they left. Then at around 3, a little past 3, witnesses, neighbors, see that the garage door is open and that the blazer is there.
Yeah, Rick DeCaro and his family arrived at the Holiday Inn they stayed at 2:59 p.m., His wife was to be left at home, but she did have plans. She planned to go with her sister out to dinner at Casa Gallardo, but she doesn't show. She was supposed to meet her there about 5 o'clock, so her sister, Melanie Enkelman, and a friend of hers decide to go over and they check on her. But once they got to her residence, they found a pretty horrifying sight.
The front door was locked. Nobody answered, so they got in through a side door and found their sister lying in the kitchen with two bullet holes in her neck, and she appeared to be somewhat beaten also. They notify police, who respond to the scene, lock down the scene, are trying to track down her blazer, or trying to track down if there's any sign of robbery. There are a couple things missing from the house, but it's like a boombox. Nothing of real value.
And some audio video equipment, probably like a receiver or something like that. And they said that the cables weren't torn from the walls or anything. It looked like everything had been carefully detached.
They need to inform the husband that his wife has been murdered. So they give him a call. And how does that go, Aaron?
They discover that he's out at this Holiday Inn and they reach out to him, but he responds in a very odd way. He's very calm, and he lets them know that he's not so sure he's going to be leaving there anytime soon because he's having a dad weekend.
He's going to continue the weekend with his children. Now, I'll give him a little bit of a pass here. His wife's been murdered. He doesn't know how to respond. He can't really take the kids home to a crime scene. But you would think he would want to come back and see what's happening, see what he can do, something. I don't know. But his response is very nonchalant, just like when he ran her through the wall in the kitchen.
I wonder how many of you are fans of this guy at this point.
There is a huge contingent of people out there that support him and are raising money for him. So just so you know, and if any of you are listening tonight, sorry if we're coming off a little biased.
The investigation turns up some things. The Chevy Blazer was seen driving at certain times. that afternoon. It stood out because the license plate was a vanity plate. It said Rick Liz, R-I-K-L-I-Z.
So Rick and his wife. And it's a small town, so people know what each other drives. People recognize their neighbors, but they don't recognize who's driving this Blazer.
Now, sometime that evening around 7 o'clock, Bazile contacts Doug Meyer, who is his half-brother, and he asked him if he had any space where he could work on his car. So he tells him about a place to go to, and that's great for Bazile because he's driving a stolen Chevy Blazer. He goes to a friend's house and gives him a boombox that he just happened to have because it's the guy's birthday, I guess. According to that guy, whose name is Richard Borak, he said that Bazile told him that he did this lady.
Meaning killed this woman.
Now, a few hours later, he told his half-brother, Doug Meyer, they had gotten together to eat pizza, and then they went out, that it was either him or her, and he wasn't going back to jail. Now, the reason this comes up like that is because he was basically saying that he was pressured into this.
He knew that Rick was thinking about divorcing his wife, and she knew about the insurance scam on the van, and that he was hired to do this.
So she would rat him out, or she would report him. And that would probably, that would send him back to prison, right?
Yeah, he's on parole. He's got all these issues with the law, and he just wanted to make $200. So he's saying, hey, I have to do this. He's looped me in because he's offered me money, and if she rats on me, it all goes downhill from there.
So Elizabeth DeCaro was murdered on March 6, 1992. This time here, in the next day or so, Bazile is telling people odd things that seem to indicate that he has killed a woman. But historically here, Bazile is a thief. He commits robbery. Murder's not something that he's done, at least that we know of. On March 12th, though, Bazile goes to a friend's trailer, and he says that he thinks the police are on to him.
And that he's been set up.
Yeah, he believes that he's being set up because he couldn't have done this. He doesn't kill people. But Kenneth Robinson calls the police. And what is it? Just sometime in a short while later, the police arrest Daniel Anthony Bazile.
They already have him on file. They know who he is. Again, it's not the biggest town. People know each other. And this guy has been trouble in the past. It's not a stretch for the police to go after him, especially after this call that they receive saying this is the man that did this, with details about the murder that no one else should have known. So they pick him up. They proceed to charge him with the crime. At first, Bazile denies everything, as usual. Then he will go on to try to distance himself and his responsibilities to this murder and throw Rick under the bus. Now, Rick's initial statements are, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know anything about him. I've never met him before. But going off of multiple witnesses, they do know each other. And when you take into consideration, there's this guy who steals a van just to dump it and torch it, only to come back, steal another vehicle, and murder Elizabeth. It's not looking like a credible story from either one of them. Because what's somebody's motivation to steal a van just to torch it? If you're going to steal a car, you're selling it for parts. You're doing something with it. You're not burning it in the middle of a field. Meanwhile, he goes back and gets this Blazer. He's not driving it. He's disassembling it in this garage that his buddy's given him. And his buddy has even said, oh, by the way, I don't like the fact that you have this dead woman's stolen vehicle in my garage. So what's up with that? And Bazile is saying, well, just give me some more time. I'll take it out of your hands here. I'll take care of this problem. How does this guy have access to all of Rick's vehicles and happens to murder Elizabeth on the same day that Rick leaves for a little family vacation without the wife. Lots of problems here that the police and the prosecutor are just tearing apart in Bazile's story and even Rick's story. So they go to trial with Bazile.
It's a state trial.
Yeah. What's some of the evidence they got against him besides the things I just mentioned?
Well, as part of the investigation, they go around and follow his tracks. They track down Richard Borack and they track down Doug Meyer and all these other people. And they find things that were left behind by Bazile, like the AV equipment. They found that at the garage. They found the boombox at Borack's apartment. I mean, it's a good investigation. They're linking Bazile to stolen items and stolen vehicles from the DeCaro house.
It's open and shut. There's not a lot of defense he has. Going through the trial transcripts, the prosecutors are nailing him to the wall. Now, the prosecutors use a lot of inflammatory language, which the defense will object to. And sometimes they'll get it sustained. Sometimes they'll get it overruled. Ultimately, the jury will find Bazile guilty and actually sentence him with the death penalty. There's that much evidence. It's a no-brainer to them.
And Missouri actually ranks pretty high on the list of states that have sentenced people to death. I think they're in the top five in the nation.
Now, he, of course, will appeal this decision. A lot of that will be based on the wording the prosecutor used, some of the allegations the prosecution makes, or the lack of objections from his defense team. I realize there are technicalities, but none of it is based off of the evidence against me is totally fabricated or I wasn't there. It's just completely based off of the way the prosecution handled the case. The appeals all get shot down. The judges rule against him one after another. And it's one of those things where if I look at the evidence and it's questionable, or if there's new evidence that shows it was somebody else and that's deemed inadmissible, something that's, I don't know, that comes off very unfair or something contrary to the truth being, hey, he might not have done it. But in his case, the defense is just trying to throw anything at the wall and get it to stick. Meanwhile, a lot of his defense is pointing the finger at Rick, who himself will end up getting charged, indicted, and thrown into trial for hiring Bazile. Now, in Rick DeCaro's trial, they have to prove his relationship with Bazile. They have to prove that they had a negotiation, an exchange of money, or some monetary value. They have to prove that because of this, he got Bazile to murder his wife. To establish connections between a hitman and someone who hires them, it's not quite as simple, but again, we have multiple witnesses who claim Rick approached them to hire somebody. We also have Elizabeth's own family who talks about his extramarital affair and his lack of love for his wife. And Rick's main responses are, they're all lying. I don't know why they would say that. And I understand that emotions run high. People want to help. If somebody's accused of murder and they've grown up or lived with them all their life and they go, they're just not capable of that. I just refuse to believe it. Or I loved Elizabeth so much and I want to help nail anyone to the wall that would have done her harm. I'm going to say whatever it takes. But in this case, all the pieces of the puzzle fit. As I cited the Colin Davis episode where literally the FBI was hired to kill a federal judge, were paid and provided photo evidence of the murder, and Colin got to walk free. In this case, it's still shaky for them. And the judge gives very contradictory commands to the jury. The prosecution, I wouldn't say they had a weak case, but it just, they weren't allowed to paint it out the way that we're painting it out right now to you, because it's a court of law. There's a lot of things that are allowed and other things that are not allowed. So the jury had to deliberate the best they could, and they acquitted Richard DeCaro of the crime of hiring a hitman to murder his wife. And he walks. And he says that he just wants to get back with his children and live his life. Now, he did cash in on a lot of insurance policies during this time. Since he cashed in on these insurance policies, the life insurance policies, well, the federal government can come in and say, ah, we're going to charge you because there's a federal link here. And he committed fraud, mail fraud, wire fraud. The terms they use for this are always very general when you defraud an insurance company or individual. It's a very general term, but in commission of a crime such as a murder. So the federal government comes in and says, we're going to take a shot at this. And of course, the whole double jeopardy thing comes up because the state has already acquitted him. But the state wasn't charging him for fraud charges and these other things. They were charging him with hiring a hitman. So the federal government can use their power to now charge him in federal court.
Okay, so the federal trial is a problem for some people because they almost feel like it's double jeopardy. So he was acquitted in the state trial. And then here comes the federal government like, we're going to have our go at him. And for some people, it just feels dirty.
I agree with that, actually. I do find it's dirty that you literally can be tried for the same crime twice in state and federal. But the federal government in this case, they come at it from a different angle than the state. They can play with the law however they want. They're the government. That's what they do.
To me, it seemed like they took it from the standpoint of it's conspiracy to commit murder, to commit fraud.
Exactly.
And in the federal trial, the judge is, I don't know, I personally feel like the judge was more reasonable. If we're looking for justice for Elizabeth DeCaro, you want the case to be open. You want people to be able to debate the evidence and the witnesses and really hash this out. And to me, just looking through the documents and the transcripts, it feels like this was a much better representation of what went down. And I feel like this jury was able to actually deliberate upon the real evidence, the real case.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Doesn't go so great for him this time because they're able to prove that he was frauding these insurance companies. They were able to prove the connection between him and Bazile. I actually feel the state proved their case, but in the end, the judge's instructions to the jury and whatnot were just so clunky that it would have been almost impossible for them to come to a guilty verdict. Whereas in the federal court, the instructions, the evidence was just far more clear. They gave him a lot more options for a verdict. When DeCaro's questioned about his thoughts on Bazile, he says, he makes me absolutely sick to my stomach and it disgusts me. And Bazile will say that Rick is the monster, not him. I guess they're not really getting along too well after all this is over, after the verdicts come in.
Let's run through it again real quick, Justin, because you stated open and shut. They have a lot on these guys, both DeCaro and Bazile. So let's establish it. It really comes down to Bazile's multiple trips to the DeCaro home, right? He's stealing a van from their driveway. He's inside the place because he's stealing audio equipment. And then he's also stealing from the garage a Chevy Blazer.
In the case against Bazile, they actually say, well, there's no way he could have been hiding in the house because the dog is very friendly and approaches everybody. But the dog was at the groomer's. Bazile doesn't have his own vehicle, so Rick has to go get him. He doesn't have any way to get there.
But he has a way to leave now because there's a Chevy Blazer in the garage.
Exactly. There's just too many issues with how he got to the house and why he would keep coming back and targeting this family if Rick wasn't involved, right?
The creepy thing is that you stated it earlier, but we didn't really establish the connection then, but two of the kids came home while two others were still at school, and the killer was in the house at that time.
Probably in the basement, waiting for Elizabeth to come home and for the family to leave. If he was just there to steal the Blazer and the whole thing went down poorly, I mean, one, why was he in the house? And two, he has enough time to go and meticulously unplug the stereo equipment and load it up. If this is a car theft gone wrong, you would think he would just run away after shooting somebody. But he sticks around. It appears he has the keys to all these vehicles. So I'm having a hard time with him just randomly showing up and doing this. It just does not add up to me. Now, of his four children, it is said that two of them support him still to this day, still support Rick. They have a Facebook support page. I think they have a GoFundMe. The funds they've raised are not even close to what their goal is. Everywhere they've posted that their father is wrongfully imprisoned due to an unconstitutional law referring to the double jeopardy. Also, they refer to he was improperly sentenced, saying that he should have been sentenced to 20 years.
Yeah, the discrepancy is that they say that because of when the murder was committed, if he was going to be found guilty on that, then he should have been sentenced under the law that existed at the time. But the court used a rule that went into effect 2 years later. So that's where they have a problem with this.
That happens all the time. I don't know if I agree with it or not. They made marijuana legal in Denver or in Colorado, but there's still people sitting in jail and prison for possession and selling of it. They don't retroactively do things. So why would they use a law retroactively to charge somebody with? It's just not how they roll.
I just saw it in a movie, but Elliot Ness, who fought against people who smuggled and sold alcohol illegally, he was asked after alcohol was legalized, what are you going to do now? He said, I'm going to go get a drink. It's like a switch, you know, you just flip it up and now we're doing this. That's the law.
They charged him with a current law and not the law that was on the books when the crime was committed. So they take issue with that. The sad thing is you'll see just a litany of commenters and people on the forums just tearing into these children. I would say that their heart's in the right place, but they're heavily deluded about the innocence of their father. I don't know if they really deserve all the hate they get online, because I feel bad. They've lost both their parents. I don't think they should be carrying a torch for him, supporting him, but I'm not going to go out there and tell them what horrible people they are and that they're father deserves to burn in hell for what he's done. That just doesn't seem to be helping.
When it comes to his kids supporting their dad, even after he drove through their mom into a wall with his van and that he had been convicted of her murder, it's not about correcting them. We don't have to tell them that their dad did this. We just need to tell it like it is. If he's going to prison, then that's where he needs to be. But we don't need to inform his kids about that. We just need justice for Elizabeth. her kids are just dealing with this in the way that they will. It's not up to us to decide or to change their minds.
It doesn't seem that they've got a lot of traction either, because I think once people look at the evidence, once people take in consideration all of the coincidental things that put their father right in the thick of this, they're not really receptive to their pleas for support and help.
And it really is coincidences, or it could be evidence. I would like to kind of go over real quick here why Elizabeth's family was so certain that he was guilty. As we know, he had an affair with his secretary, who was his brother-in-law's wife. And in October of 91, this is about the time that he basically said, fine, I'm not going to smother my wife. I'm not going to give her all these things and watch her like a hawk. I'm going to just let all that go. He stopped being possessive and he stopped going to family get-togethers. It was very noticeable. You know, if they're supposed to get together with her family or whatever, he wasn't going. He wasn't a part of that anymore. Georgiana, I'm sure she carried some guilt here because she told her daughter, make this work, you know, work it out with your husband. And what she had said was, you know, she had found out that Rick told his wife, Elizabeth, that if he left her, that she would have nothing. She would have absolutely nothing. And Elizabeth is trying to save the marriage. But I want to leave you with this. On the day that Rick left with his kids and the dog to go to the Lake of the Ozarks, in his lunch that was packed, his wife had written a note. She had written to her husband. She had said, looking forward to really starting over and loving again, one day at a time. Before we finish, I wanted to give some thoughts on the Holly Bobo trial. As anyone knows who's listened to our Holly Bobo episode, Holly Lynn Bobo was 20 years old from Darden, Tennessee, who disappeared on April 13th, 2011, from just outside her home. And inside the home was her brother, Clint. He heard some voices, and by the time he looked outside, he saw his sister accompanying a person across the yard and towards the woods. And he just assumed that she was with her boyfriend, Drew Scott. They had suspects. Those suspects had gone to trial. And at the center is Zach Adams. He was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison plus 50 years. At the time we did our episode, Justin and I both seemed to think that proving the guilt of these men would be difficult. Really, I think you have to credit the attorneys, the prosecutors in this case, because they were able to put together a better case in court. I think that it really just boils down to that. Anybody who has doubts about Zach Adams' responsibility, his guilt in this case, well, his co-defendant, Jason Autry, is partially to blame for Adams' failure to win this case. It's really his testimony. He was able to give pretty consistent testimony. There were other witnesses as well who put together this picture of Zach Adams, who was part of this plot to kidnap and rape and murder Holly Bobo. What really stuck out to me when we were covering it is that Holly Bobo's brother, Clint, actually saw the person who was with Holly. And I know we've talked many times about eyewitness testimony. He was fairly close, even though he was inside the house. He was close enough to see that the person looked like, according to him, her boyfriend. Now, our boyfriend, Drew, look up pictures of him. His name's Drew Scott. And in my opinion, he really doesn't look like any of the people in this case. Now, Clint had testified that the person could have looked like Shane Austin, but I just don't know that that works. Looking over all of the images of the suspects, really, in my opinion, the only one who even looks like they might pass for her boyfriend, and I don't even think he really does, is one of the Adams brothers. But according to Clint, it didn't really look like them. The other suspect that was a possible suspect early on was a man by the name of Terry Britt, and he was known as Chester the Molester. If you look at images of him, he doesn't look anything like, in my opinion, anything like her boyfriend. But again, you're talking about someone who saw someone through a window. this must be really hard on the family, on the Bobo family, because as I said, Clint saw whoever was with Holly, made an assumption that it was her boyfriend, and her mom knew that they weren't together. She knew that Drew and Holly weren't together that morning. And so she said, get your gun and go and shoot him. And Clint couldn't. He had a lot of confusion, I think, having woken up not too long before and having that assumption in his head. And then probably that surprise of his mother saying, go get your gun and shoot him. That's probably a lot to take in a short amount of time. Hopefully, this will ease some of the pain that the Bobo family has gone through. Hopefully, this trial has provided enough answers for those that have been following this case and for her family and her friends. And this trial, being as open as it was, really gave us some insight into just how powerful an impact your attorney has and how much it means to have a defendant turn on the others. Many will point to that and say, he's just trying to save his own skin. So when Jason Autry says this or he says that, he's just trying to line it up so he can save his own tail. That's it. Probably one of the most important pieces of testimony came from a man named Chris Swift. He had served time in a cell by Zach Adams, and he had talked with him. And according to him, Zach Adams said, there was no gun and no body, talking about Holly Bobo. And this is before they had a body. So they didn't know at the time how she had died. And well, I think that's pretty important because they ended up figuring out that there was a murder weapon. There was a gun. How would he know that she was killed with a gun rather than strangled or stabbed or what have you? Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.